Access number 27789, Mr. Bert Wolstenholme, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about the time at the gunnery school at Dumfries, in, I think, 1940, and the summer of 1940 still, or getting into the winter, the autumn.
Yeah.
You had these various gun turrets on the ground, fixed to the ground.
They were fixed, yeah.
And which ones were they? I mean, do you remember much about the turrets? Which, you know, what the characteristics were, Fraser, Nash, Bristol, Bolton, Paul, I presume they were.
No, they were... Bolton Paul's they were, yeah, that's right.
And what were they like? How do you remember how you operate? I mean, I know you didn't go on to be an air gunner, so if you don't remember it, it doesn't matter too much.
Well, they're pretty straightforward. If just a matter of using common sense. I don't know how this one that went round. He must have done something, but it was pretty common sense, you know. He just pressed the old button and that was it. He either hit it or he didn't. And
so any other stories you got from your time there?
What? When at Dumfries? Oh, well, I think it was New Year when we was up there. I'm almost sure it was New Year. Yeah, it was. And I know we all went down to town. And we had a skinful, obviously. And coming back, we had to pass this row of houses. And at the first house, there were some people came out and they invited us in for a noggin. Well, I'd never drunk whiskey in my life. So they gave us a drink and we went out the back door of that house, into the back door of the next house, and I think there was about 8 houses altogether on this row. And by the time we'd gone in and out, we had a drink in each one. They were so kind, these Scotch people. Time we got out there, I was legless. Legless. I don't remember getting back to camp that night. Obviously we did, but... Can you stop that while I go to the toilet?
Anything else about the training at Dumfries?
Well, it's mostly... as I say, it's mostly the gunnery. Well, they had us... We had to fire Sten guns as well, but I don't know why we had to do that. But they had us firing Sten guns. You remember the old Sten gun?
What did you think of the Sten gun?
They used to jam up left, right and centre. They were hopeless.
What about the accuracy?
Well, I wouldn't say I was accurate. They might have been accurate, I don't know, but I wasn't.
And did you do any clay pigeon shooting?
No, we didn't do any of that. No.
And did you do any flying there?
No, I'll come on to that in a minute.
So how long were you at Dumfries? Into 1941.
Yeah, I came out of there, and this is where things took a different turn. I thought then I would be going to a flying school. Instead of that, I ended up at a place called Leek.
Now, to go to a flying school to learn to fly?
That's where I thought I'd have been going. This is where the story takes a twist. I ended up at a place called Leek, just outside, not far from Stoke.
In Staffordshire?
Staffordshire. I thought, well, you know, what we're doing here. And then we was told we had to learn Japanese Morse code. In other words, the hieroglyphics and the different parts made up the code. So I thought, oh, I don't know. Then I thought, oh, we're going to be... But I haven't even learnt to fly yet. I couldn't think of what was happening. Anyway, I went through this business of learning Japanese where you wrote the first few bits across and then you wrote downwards. And there were different hieroglyphics that meant different things, like what we used to call TL, like a T with a little L on it, or O tick. So, anyway, I went through all that. Next thing I knew, we'd been drafted to the Far East. Had no training for flying or anything. Anyway, off we went to Liverpool.
Now, any preparations at all? Or?
No, everything was so secret, you didn't know what the hell was happening half the time. You were just given your your transport, your passport for on the trains and what have you. And as I say, I ended up at Liverpool. I was kitted out with the old pit helmet and khaki shorts and what have you. And off we went. And went through the Suez Canal.
Do you remember the name of the ship?
Castle something. I can't remember the second bit of it. But we stopped in the Suez, and we were ordered, we weren't allowed to go swimming. But I kept seeing all these merchant navy blokes diving off the ship, and I thought, oh, blimey, could do with having a swim. Anyway, I dived off the ship with these merchant navy blokes. I thought, well, just in my trunks, nobody will know who I am. Anyway, I went swimming, and I went across the dock, and I was coming back, and I got cramp. Cramp in my right leg. And I'm floundering around in the sewers. Anyway, one of the merchant navy lads took me up to this ladder, this rope ladder. Anyway, I got to the top on the ship, and a couple of my mates says, get away. He said, one of what officers is coming up. Anyway, I shut off and I got back into my uniform, so nobody knew any different. But it was a near do that, because I'd have been shocked if I'd been found out. And then we went to Mombasa. We started to refuel at Mombasa. In between that, we had one or two alarms from submarines and that.
Do you remember much about them?
Yeah. The convoy I was in, there was, I think, about 56 ships, I think. And we had destroyers down both sides. There was a cruiser, but you never saw, only the smoke way out in front. And we had King George V with us, the battleship. And every time there was an alarm, we all had to go downstairs, out the way. And you could hear depth charges going, boom. And it used to sound through where we was, you know. I thought, blimey, a bloody torpedo comes in here, we've got no chance, you know. But you had to clear the decks. Anyway, the other thing was that they used to have what they call lifeboat drill.
Tell us about that.
Oh, this is funny, this. They always had it before the NAFI. And you used to line up, one line and another line behind there, with your bits and pieces on. And one of the favourite tricks they used to do, your shoes used to have tabs on, or your boots had tabs on. And if you didn't know it, they used to tie your tabs together, right? If you couldn't feel anybody doing it at the back of you. Of course, my boat job finishes, the mad dash to get to the NAFI. Of course, all they got their boots tied together, you can imagine the rest, can't you? And that was quite funny at the time. Then at Mombasa, they allowed us to go on the deck, and that's when unfortunately I got heat stroke. I was in the sun too long. I ended up.
How bad did it get? How bad?
Well, all I can say, it was like a double dose of the flu. You had all the symptoms of the flu. They whipped me downstairs into the, where all the doctors and what have you. And what they were doing there, they was putting ice on me, and then they was putting blankets on me. And fortunately, I got through it, but unfortunately, one of the other lads died, and they buried him at sea. But I was lucky, I got through with mine. And then, after that, we had one or two more scares with submarines, and we landed at Durban, South Africa. And you had a number, and when you got off, you had these people meeting you. and I was taken to this people's place. I couldn't believe my eyes when I got there. Great big house, big, more like a mansion. Tennis courts, swimming pools. And I had the life of Riley while I was there. And I always remember they had a daughter. And they were trying their best to get me hitched up to the, because a lot of the lads got married out there. But I was having none of it. I didn't want marriage or anything like that. And after a fortnight, we came back to the ship. Well, not to the same ship. We got into a little bit of a old broken down tub, it was. And we went across to Rangoon then. And I heard later on that the ship that took us to Durban was sunk on the way back to England. Fortunately, there was no troops on.
So you were going to Rangoon, that was Burma?
41, yeah.
So before the Japanese were in the war?
No, they were just coming in it then.
Back end of?
Yeah. Because the at the time, I'm trying to think now, the, what do you call them? What used to call them? People who used to turn against their own people. What's it called?
Traitors.
No. Fifth Column. And all this lot started, and then we was evacuated then to a place called, we got on these trucks and spent
about, we're running ahead. So what happened when you got to Rangoon?
Well, it was more or less,
you know,
we started. We were only there for a fortnight actually, and we were just getting everything organised, and they were setting up these, how can I put it, like shed things they were, where you went inside and you started intercepting Japanese Morse code. And then there was, the news came that the Japanese was being helped out with the Fifth Column, and we had to get out in Uri. So we ended up at Chittagong.
Now, what do you remember about getting out from Rangoon?
It was about 3 days nearly in trucks. There was a mixture. There was Army, Navy and Air Force, all mixed up together. And it was about 3 days altogether.
And that's, pretty rough. That'd be December 41, would it?
Yeah. Then we, where am I up to? And then we went to Chittagong, and from there they moved us to a place called Barrackpore in India. That's about 14 miles outside Calcutta. And then we started doing what we were supposed to do, intercepting Japanese. And it was there till 42.
Now, what do you remember about that work, intercepting Japanese signals?
Oh, it was not too bad for me. I picked it up pretty quick. I was having problems with the hieroglyphics at the time. And it was a bit awkward where you had to, the preamble of the message went across from left to right, and then the rest of the message went down. And it took a while to get used to doing that. And you were sat there and all the static, and you were trying to pick out these bits and pieces. And
did you have any special wireless equipment or any special equipment at all?
No, as far as I know, there was just, there was 1154s, I think they were. I think they were 1155. Wait a minute, 1154. They might have been 1155. Transmitters 1154. I think that was the way, and it might have been the other way, I can't quite remember. Then, while I was there, I developed foot rot.
And what's that? What sort of symptoms?
Well, it started off with itching between your toes.
Like athlete's foot, so.
Yeah, and it works your way up. I might have a few left, yeah? No, it might have gone there. But these, they went straight up your leg, and they come out in sores. And the MO, along with quite a few more of us that got it, they bunged us off to up the Himalayas, to Darjeeling. And it was one of them...
Was this hospitalisation or just convalescence? Sent to a
hospital? No, you were treated while you was up at Darjeeling. And it was a sort of road where one lot could come up and the other lot had to wait before one lot could come down. And it was really air-raising. Because when you looked over the side of the galley, it's lorry, and you look down, there's great big drops on either side. And when you got to Darjeeling, another lot started coming down the other. So it was a case of one lot went up, one lot come down. And we were billeted in these great long wooden huts up there. And I had a Kashmiri girl I got friendly with. She used to send me passion fruit.
How did you get on with the Indians generally?
Well, Darjeeling was all right because they're all Kashmiri people up there. That's where this thing is now. You know, the earthquake thing in Kashmir. That's where it was. No, they were smashing. But when I come back to Bharatpur, at the time there was what they call a Congress party. They used to all wear white hats. And they used to throw stones at our, if you was in the lorry, as you're going through, they used to throw stones at you. They didn't like us. That was what they call a Congress party. Don't know if you've heard of them or not. And they all, you could always tell they wore what, these white hats. And then, next thing I knew, the call into the squadron, I can remember the squadron leader's name, Squadron Leader Card. It was me, I'm not sure, there was about another five or six of us, something like that. We was all called into his office and told we were going back to Blighty.
This
was 1942. So, they shunted us off and we'd come back to Blighty.
Do you know what part of 42? Late, presumably.
I think it was late, yeah. Might be not September, something like that.
Do you remember anything about the return trip?
Well, it was much the same as the one coming. We went back home in a convoy, the usual destroyers and what have you, the usual alarms and... But fortunately, we was lucky. Nothing hit us anyway, let's put it that way. And then I was sent to... what's the name of it? Can you stop it a minute? Well, we were drafted up to Madley, and that's when I started my training. It was two-seater. You were to sit behind the pilot in the front. And
so this was flying school?
Yeah. There were Proctor aircraft. And you went out, you round out your trailing aerial and you did your exercises with your mouse, etc., etc.
Now, what sort of... this is dual control flights in the Proctor. What do you remember of those flights?
Well, one of the things I do remember, the night before, I was due to go out at 6 o'clock in the morning on the flight, and I'd had a few beers the night before, and halfway through the flight, I could feel it coming up. And I was on the intercom, I said to the pilot, I said, I want to be bloody sick. He said, open the window and stick your head out. And I didn't know, but apparently this is one of the things the pilots all had a good laugh at, because as you know, this is a slipstream. And do I have to tell you the gory details?
Yes.
So I opened the thing, and that wind was whipping past, and I stuck my head out, And heaved all, everything I got, all the pints I'd had the night before, my breakfast and what have you. And it all come back off me. It all come back through the window. I was covered in sick. And he made me carry on and do my exercise. I didn't feel too good, believe me or not. And all I could smell was all this sickness, you know. And when we got down, obviously, I had to go and get changed. I had to go and have a shower. And
what were you learning in the dual control flights? What was he teaching you?
Well, it was just communications, really. You had to communicate with base. And
so you weren't learning to fly?
Oh, no.
Sorry,
no. No,
so
no.
There's a misunderstanding now. I wonder what you...
No. It was purely communications exercises. That's why I say we had to put the trailing aerial out. It was a great big long piece of wire. And you had to contact base or whatever. And you had to start learning about QDEs.
Now, was this QDM. Intercom or was it Morse?
No, it was Morse.
It was Morse?
Yeah. It was Morse. You had to... Everything was done in Morse at the time. And, of course, you started learning about QDMs, QFEs.
QDM.
QDM, directional finding.
Do you know how it works now?
Well, there were code words, which meant a certain... One meant a QDM was a fix, you know, getting a fix, which you passed at the time... Later on, you pass when I was on proper ops, then you dropped it off to the navigator, and they all meant something different. I can't think what QFE was now at the time. That's where my memory lets me down a bit.
All right, you're doing fine. What else were you learning at Madley?
That's chiefly it, communications. And then I went from there to 12. OTU, Edgehill, Wolfhart's Lodge, and that's where I was crewed up.
Now, so we're still in 1942?
Back end, yeah.
Now, tell me about being crewed up. What was the procedure of being crewed up?
Well, they left it up to yourselves, more or less. You all congregate in this great big hangar and you just mingled around. And I remember, I'm trying to think now. Yeah, Skipper had... He had the bomb aimer with him, that's right. Yeah. He had
now,
a bomb
who was
aimer.
The Skipper?
Alan Lummis.
And what rank was he at that time?
Pilot officer.
And what was he like? What first impression did you get of Alan Lewis?
Absolutely a fantastic man. He spoke with a plum in his mouth a bit, but that wasn't him. He was quite down to earth. When on operations, obviously, he was strict. But he was always game for a laugh, you know. And he come walking up and he had this bomb aimer.
Do you remember the bomb aimer's name? Doesn't matter if you don't worry, he'll come back to you.
I know all the others.
Okay, well, tell you. He came up with this bomb aimer.
Yeah.
What happened?
And they had a bar in this big hangar where you could get a drink, and I was stood there and he walked up and I said, oh, excuse me, I said, have you got a wireless operator? He said, no, we're looking for one. I said, well, you know, I said, you know, will I do, sort of thing, you know. It was a bit embarrassing at the time. Anyway, he took me on and then he said, we're looking for a navigator. So I said, look, I said, there's three navigators over there. All Canadians, every one of them. So we waltzed over, and anyway, he picked Johnny.
Now, who's Johnny?
Johnny Cole.
Johnny?
Cole, C-O-L-E, and he lives, and he's still alive today, he lives in Sioux Lookout in Canada.
And he was a sergeant?
We were all sergeants, apart from Skipper. And then, obviously, after that, we picked up Andy, who is still living.
And what was he?
Andy Dujardin. Dujardin.
How do you spell that?
It's Andy Dujardin.
And what was he? He was a sergeant. What was he going to be?
Mid-upper gunner. And then we picked up Bill Williams, who comes from Leicester, and he was a rear gunner.
What were these people like? What was Johnny Cole like then?
Oh, they were all fantastic lads, yeah. All fantastic.
Anything special about Johnny?
Very softly spoken. If you went out for a night out, he wouldn't pick any women up because he had his Canadian sweetheart back home. He was so loyal.
But, and the mid-upper gunner, Andy Dujardin.
No, he was a comedian. I've got a story to tell you about that.
A humorist.
Oh, he was a comedian, yeah.
And what about Bill Williams?
Bill, again, quiet lad. Didn't have a lot to say, but he was genuine. Well, they all were genuine lads, you know.
And you liked them all from the start?
Oh, fantastic lads, yeah. We got on like house on fire. It was amazing.